Welcome, Voltron fans, to another exciting week where we get to talk about Voltron. This is Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. I'm your host, Mark Morrell, and joining me is my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Hey, reunited, and it feels so good. Reunited with you, Mark Morrell, and our listeners and friends, fellow fans of this thing called Voltron, to each and every one of you out there in podcast listener land, welcome to Let's Voltron.
And it's always a good time to have a reunion with Voltron fans. There's never, ever a bad time to get together with Voltron fans.
That is true, especially in this podcast. I wonder why, Mark.
Oh, there's all kinds of reunions going on this week.
Yeah, that's true.
Within this past week, we started seeing some photos being put out on social media by the Voltron official channels. So we're talking about Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And the very first photo that everybody saw was rain falling an umbrella.
Right.
So a lot of people started making guesses as to why the official Voltron channel would be posting rain falling on an umbrella.
Well, clearly, water, Blue Lion, Allura, or maybe Lance. I mean, duh, come on.
So they were wondering what this was leading to, and there were just thousands upon thousands of guesses. They went deep into the fiction of the whole story, all these episodes. Where was water mentioned? Where was rain mentioned? They even went into maybe the fan art and stuff like that, where, you know, characters had been depicted in rain and all that kind of stuff. Just crazy amounts of guesses, right?
Yeah, and my personal favorite was, you know, that it was a reference to Scree ducts and Scree, obviously meaning that Slav would become the next Black Paladin. What do you think?
I really don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Can you imagine him second guessing based on how many different realities he's looking at and what are the chances in each reality?
That would be awesome.
I'm sorry, that would take too long to come up with a decision. Besides, everybody on the team would start acting like Shiro did, and his eye would start getting that twitch.
Yeah, I bet even Voltron's eye would do that.
That would be funny to see.
It would. We've got a theme for the next holiday video.
Yeah. Anyway. The thing about it is though, nobody was really guessing what was actually going on based on this first photo.
Right.
So the next day comes and another photo comes up on the official Voltron channels. And this time it's a picture of like a coffee cup and coffee beans.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of steam coming out of the top of the coffee cup.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people started focusing just on the steam and maybe the shape that it was making.
Right.
And then other people started talking about all the different types of places that sell coffee, like McDonald's and Starbucks and all these other things. And then what does coffee have to do with the umbrella picture and the rain and all that kind of stuff? And not really putting two and two together. I think there was like maybe one or two people that really may have gotten the fact that it may have to do with the northwest section of the United States and maybe Seattle.
Yeah, that I began to get a clue at about that point with the second clue. But of course, at first, when I thought coffee, I thought Starbucks, which meant, oh, you know, Dirk Benedict from Battlestar Galactica, obviously going to be a guest voice. Wouldn't that be awesome? But no. I did start to narrow in on a possible city.
Right. So then, you know, some people were thinking maybe one of the people in the cast, or maybe even one of the characters on the team, was going to start like a coffee business or something like that.
There you go.
But no, that was not it either. And then the following day, I think everybody really started to come together because they showed an image of a green gem. And it was in sort of like a diamond cut, you know. So a lot of people were thinking, you know, green gems and all this kind of stuff. Maybe it has to do with Pidge and something of a new power for Green Lion or something like that. But a lot of people recognized it as an emerald.
Yeah, I personally thought it was one of the gems from Shimmer and Shine, but Genie's Divine, Boom Zara May, Three Wishes a Day. My daughter watches that. But anyway,
Wow.
but no, I'm kidding. But
Okay.
yeah.
So, yeah, then people started putting two and two together and coming up with Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle,
That's right. Very cool.
which takes place March 1st through the 4th.
Yeah.
And
And
following that day, after the Emerald came out, there was an official video put out by the official Voltron channels, and this one was starring Josh Keaton.
yes, very cool.
And he actually got to announce that Voltron Legendary Defender will be having a panel on Thursday, March 1st at 6:15 p.m. at Emerald City Comic Con.
Very, very cool.
Now, you happen to have the official information from Emerald City's site. Would you be able to read that out for us?
Well, I did learn how to read within the last week, so yes, I think I can help. But actually, so I'm at emeraldcitycomiccon.com, and yes, so the panel is called, drum roll please, DreamWorks Voltron Legendary Defender, a Netflix original series. That's what they're calling the panel. An appropriate title since it's about that show. It is, as you said, March 1st, 2018, from 6:15 p.m. to 7:15 p.m. on the main stage at Washington State Convention Center, room or area 4A. And the description is: shocked by Prince Lotor coming to their rescue in the fight against the evil witch Hagar, the Paladins struggle with whether or not they can really trust him. Join executive producer Joaquin Dos Santos, co-executive producer Lauren Montgomery, design supervisor Christine Behan, and Josh Keaton for a sneak peek into an all-new season of the Netflix original series, DreamWorks Voltron: Legendary Defender. But wait, there's more!
There's more.
Yes, all attendees will receive an Emerald City Comic Con exclusive poster designed by Seattle native Bean.
Oh,
Is
nice.
that cool or what?
Yes, that is so cool.
Yeah.
And of course, we have had Christine Bion on our podcast.
Yes, and we would love to have her back sometime. She was an amazing guest.
Right, and we will be able to have a chance to meet up with these people again at ECCC. You will not be able to attend, though, will you?
That is true. That is true. I'm in a vacation deficit right now. So, no, unfortunately not. But you will be there.
Yeah, my wife and I will be there, so Kim and I will be there, and we will be able to attend the panel. And we will be able to get any kind of interviews that happen there, and as well as any signing coverage that happens there as well.
That is very cool.
We are expecting that there will be some signings.
Nice.
All right, so the other question that a lot of people had was about Jeremy Shada, because Jeremy Shada, it's been long known that he was going to be at Emerald City Comic Con. The information has been out there for a while. He has his own panel happening on March 2nd. But what people don't know is he going to be able to be there early enough to attend the Voltron Legendary Defender panel?
That is a good question.
People have been asking Emerald City Comic Con themselves, and they don't know. What they do know is that he had his own panel scheduled. And do you have that information about his panel?
I do, in fact.
Okay, go ahead.
Here we go. It's called Jeremy Shada Spotlight. It's being held on March 2nd, 2018, from 3:45 p.m. to 4:45 p.m. in the same room as the Voltron Legendary Defender panel. It's main stage WSCC 4A. And the description is: more than just a voice actor on series like Voltron and Adventure Time, Jeremy Shada has a great career in front of the camera and also behind a different kind of microphone as the lead singer of the band Make Out Monday. He's got a lot to say, and we're ready to listen.
Yeah, he's got a lot of things going on right now.
Yeah, busy guy.
Yeah. Like we said, we're not sure if he's going to be part of any interviews or signings or anything with Voltron, but it is hoped that he will be.
Awesome.
But we can't guarantee that.
Right.
So the other thing is that we have a couple of other things that are going on at Emerald City that we know of. We know that Blackie Shepherd will be there as well.
Yes, he'll be in booth II14, or at least that's what it looks like. Yes, so he will be there. He, of course, is a Seattle. Actually, he's Seattle based. I didn't know that.
Yes, he is a Seattle native.
Yeah, it says Blackie Shepherd is a Seattle-based comic book artist whose previous work includes Vampirella Fury Tales, written by Stuart Moore, and Voltron from the Ashes, written by Cullen Bunn. He is currently working on a creator-owned comic called Brawler and the new Pumpkinhead comic.
Yes, a lot of people are looking forward to Pumpkinhead.
Yes, and that is again with Cullen Bunn for Dynamite Comics.
Right.
And that's in Artist Alley.
So we will definitely be paying a visit to Blackie.
That's cool.
Blackie's a good friend of the podcast.
That's right, he is.
And also, we know that Han Solo will be at ECCC.
Yes, that'll be in booth 1417. For those of you who don't like to spell out digits, that's 1417. And it says Han Solo for ages cool and up. The description is, we specialize in officially licensed jewelry for classic and modern fandoms. The products that will be available at ECCC will be from Transformers, D&D, that's Dungeons & Dragons, Masters of the Universe, Voltron, classic and modern, She-Ra, Princess of Power, Universal Monsters, woohoo, and Court of the Dead from Sideshow Collectibles. And it says, for info, contact shop at honcholo.com.
We are really looking forward to what they have coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Because we know there's some new Voltron Legendary Defender stuff, and we know there's some new classic Voltron stuff coming up. We may see some of that at ECCC, or we may have to wait all the way until San Diego Comic-Con to see some of that stuff.
Yeah, but what we're going to get to see, whenever we get to see it, is going to be awesome.
Yes. So this is awesome. We've got Jeremy Shada at ECCC. We've got Josh Keaton, Joaquin Dos Santos, Lauren Montgomery, Christine Bion, all at the panel. And we've got Han Solo and Blackie Shepherd.
Yes, and but wait, there's more.
There's more?
There is! It's a Voltron meetup.
Woohoo! For fans.
Yes, and this to me, as much as I love, love, love meeting people who have actually worked on the Voltron programs, I really, really, really dig interacting with fellow fans. That to me is the big win about going to a convention like this. You know, as much as I love the panels and the interviews and everything else, it's so cool to meet fellow fans. And this Voltron meetup is being held March 1st, 2018 from 4:15 p.m. to 5:15 p.m. And that's at WSCC room 307. And the description is, welcome to the Voltron meetup. Confused on what to do? Here are a few tips. Talk to strangers. Yes, despite what your parents told you, that is okay here. Meet some new people, share your interests, show off your costumes with pictures, take advantage of our cool backdrop, and get some photos of all the awesome costumes. Cosplay is encouraged but not required. Tweet about your experience, have some cool shots. Meet new comrades or met new comrades, let us know about it with hashtag ECCC or hashtag ECCC meetups.
Cool.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun con.
So that starts 2 hours before the actual Voltron panel.
Yes, and it ends about an hour before. So you'll have to run yourselves crazy to try to get into that panel. but if you're dressed up as a lion or you got a jetpack from your paladin armor costume, that may help you out.
I'm sure everybody has a jetpack with their costume.
That's right.
Come on.
Who wouldn't?
It's standard issue, right?
That's right. Or those Bayards that so many people have. Very cool.
Okay, so this is awesome. It appears as though we're going to get some Season 5 love,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to start with ECCC on March 1st.
That is going to be so much fun. I wish I could go, but I'm so glad you and Kim are going, and that many, many Voltron fans that we know and many Voltron fans that we have not yet met will be there.
Right. When it comes to the time that comes out, obviously you and I won't be able to record a podcast.
Right.
As Kim and I will be going to Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll bring all that coverage back with us, and then we'll record the following.
Yep.
Okay.
That'll be awesome.
And then, like I said, we don't have an official date for when Season 5 will be coming out, but we have a pretty good idea they're going to announce it there.
Yeah, it sure sounds very fifth season-centric, so I'd be shocked if they didn't have a date.
And a lot of you were asking, does this mean they're not going to be at WonderCon like they have the last 2 years? That's what it probably means.
Okay.
So as of this time, we don't have a definitive as to whether or not we'll see anything official at WonderCon, but we don't think we'll be seeing anything official at WonderCon from DreamWorks because they'll be at ECCC.
Yeah, during the same month.
Right.
But one thing to keep in mind is that WonderCon is fun in its own right. If you've been there before just for Voltron, I'm sure you've enjoyed many other things at WonderCon, and I'm sure there's a lot of fun stuff to offer there this year as well.
And I just wanted to let everybody know also that Kim and I will be attending WonderCon as well.
Nice. I will not be there again. It's starting to become a broken record, but you and Kim will be there, and some of our friends, young, friends of old, friends of new, and friends we've not yet met will be there. So I'm sure it'll be a fun time.
Right. So we are expecting that there will still be a lot of Voltron fans there, obviously, because there have been the last 2 years. So we expect a lot of cosplay. We expect maybe a Voltron fan meetup. But definitely there will be stuff there that the Voltron fans can do together.
That is so cool.
So, in addition to all that about the conventions, I wanted to make a special mention of my favorite football team, the Eagles, going to the Super Bowl.
All right. I hear that's a big thing.
It is.
All right.
Yes, and we had to beat the Minnesota team, the Vikings, so that we could go to Minnesota for the Super Bowl.
All right. I hear that's a big thing too.
Yes. So we are looking forward to taking down the Patriots, winning our first ever Super Bowl in Philadelphia.
Awesome. Well, best of luck to all the teams involved. I have to be neutral on this. You don't, but I do.
Right.
Yeah. And I have one additional Voltron tidbit. If you are a shopper at Big Bad Toy Store, they are offering for pre-order a 3-pack of the Shiro, Keith, and Lance Paladin figures from Playmates Toys. It is available for $39.99, estimated to arrive in March. I would advise you all if you're a little loath to pay those kinds of prices. Now, I love Big Bad Toy Store. They're a great outlet for amazing products. But if you would like to save a few bucks, because that averages out to about 13 bucks a figure, you will probably find these figures in the next several months as the additional product is rolled out from Playmates Toys at mass retail. So I don't think this is a bad deal for these figures, but if you wait it out a little longer, you might find them at about 10 bucks a pop instead.
Yeah, and I don't want to cause a stir out there, but I just happened to notice recently, because I pay attention to the LEGO Ideas site, that the ship in the bottle is going to be available soon. And if you remember when we talked about Lendi Tayag and we talked about the things that were approved, his Voltron was approved, his Voltron design, but at the same time that his Voltron design was approved, so was the ship in the bottle. So I'm seeing, reports that the ship in the bottle's available soon. Does that also mean that Lendi Tayag's design of Voltron's going to be available soon? I don't know.
Yeah, great question. It's supposed to come out sometime this year.
Yes.
Yeah, but maybe it'll come out a bit earlier than we might anticipate.
I don't know, but I'm just dying with excitement to see a Voltron Lego available in stores.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be so cool.
All right, but while we're talking about shopping for Voltron items, we should let everybody know that starting today, January 24th, today, we are having a TeePublic sale on our Let's Voltron store, and that sale is available for all TeePublic users. So anybody who goes on to TeePublic is going to get these deals because everything's on sale.
Cool.
And it starts with t-shirts at $14, tanks at $17, hoodies at $35, mugs at $12, totes at $16, pillows are only $21, tapestries $22, phone cases $22, notebooks are only $10, laptop cases are $30, stickers are only $2. And wall art is only $8.
Nice.
So all of those things are available in the Let's Voltron designs that we have on our Let's Voltron store. That includes our artistic designs by Blackie Shepherd, which we mentioned at ECCC. Also, Zilla, We have the Five to Thrive design, and we also have Ellen Torrey's Stand Together design.
Very cool.
That's in addition to a bunch of other designs that we've curated on our site.
Cool.
So you can also get our logos. If you'd like to get something with our logo on them, you can do that as well.
That sounds podcast-tastic. Is that a word? It is now.
And I want people to know that the same thing applies that we've had at past conventions. If you see us at ECCC or at WonderCon, come up to us, show us your Let's Voltron gear, whether it be, you know, stickers or wall art or t-shirts or anything. Show us your Let's Voltron gear and we'll give you some Let's Voltron stickers.
Ooh, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I have one more merchandise announcement.
Okay.
The Voltron store now has for pre-order Voltron Legendary Defender Volume 2 Pilgrimage from Lion Forge Comics. It is a pre-order and it will ship on February 13th and the price is $15.99. If you've read any of the Lion Forge Comics Voltron Legendary Defender issues, I think you'll really enjoy them. Or if you've read them, you've enjoyed them, I'm sure. If you haven't, check them out. They are worth the read, and that's a great price for 5 issues and 1 trade paperback.
All right. So we have a very special episode 2 of season 4 review of the episode Reunion.
Yes, from Voltron Legendary Defender.
Right. And this is a very special episode about Matt and Pidge and a brother and a sister. And boy, it just doesn't get too much better than that, does it?
Yeah, it is incredible. The range of tones and emotions and feelings that we get from this animated program. And this is definitely one of the more touching stories.
Yeah. So we're going to get right into that pretty soon here. But we just want to say what happened within the last week in Voltron. Well, before we talked to you last time, we didn't get to talk to you about Hunk's birthday.
That's right.
And that was on January 13th. We saw a very special video that was put out by DreamWorks, and it was on the Voltron Twitter account, and we saw it in other places as well. It's a special video that was introduced by Tyler Labine,
mm-hmm.
the voice of Hunk in Voltron Legendary Defender. And it included a very special recipe for Skulltrite cookies.
Yeah, that was fun. I watched it. I learned a lot. And who knew that that's what Skulltrite is made of?
Sugar and spice and everything nice, right?
That's right. Yeah, I was just about to say, if you wonder what Skulltrite is made of, check out that video.
And that's what Teledav lenses are made of.
Nice.
Teledav lenses, yeah, Skulltrite. This is what we went to the Unalu shop for, right?
That's right.
In Space Mall.
Mm-hmm.
We got a whole collection of Skulltrite lenses.
Yes, for and all it cost us was one Okari flying cube.
So, a little bit later on, though, we found out that we got a free cow out of the deal.
Yes, with every purchase, yes.
Because we went to It's Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did we pick up Killbot Phantasm.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a special video game system that when they got back, they really didn't know how to hook it up.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere later on, we did find that they did hook it up, and Lance was playing it right before he found out that Karan and Allura wanted some milkshakes.
Mm-hmm. So to recap, yeah. We're recapping season 4, and we've only just begun. And we haven't even reviewed that episode yet, have we?
No, and it's amazing that Hunk's birthday can bring us all to this, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all about the food, man.
That's right.
That was a special thing for Voltron fans. They've been looking for things that they could get a taste of, you know, what's going on with the people from, you know, DreamWorks and Voltron. And in addition to seeing Tyler Labine in this video introducing this recipe for Hunk's birthday, it was revealed that some of the voice actors were back to doing their voice acting for Voltron. In fact, we have pictures of the whole cast.
Yes, I saw that.
So we had pictures of Steven Yeun, Tyler Labine, Jeremy Shada, Rhys Darby, Kimberly Brooks, Josh Keaton, Bex Taylor-Klaus. Anybody I'm missing?
Cree Summer was, I guess they're considered additional voices, but a great representation all around. Yeah.
Even AJ Lucasio got into the bit and said that he was on the other side of the door.
Oh, there you go. Was Neil Kaplan there?
We didn't hear from Neil on that one.
Okay.
No.
But a lot of people, suffice it to say, yeah.
Right. So it was just good to see the whole core seven together again.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. It's good to see that they're back in the voice booth and doing some more recordings.
Yep.
There's a lot of excitement out there, of course, for season five, and we still don't have a date yet, but we know that one will be coming pretty soon.
Yep. Keep your hopes and wishes high and your tension and apprehension low. The date will come. We will all have another batch of awesome episodes to check out.
And that's why it's cool that we're doing these season four reviews because we'll be hopefully leading right up into season five.
Yep.
So let's get right into Voltron Legendary Defender season four, episode two, Reunion.
All right.
So Reunion was directed by Steve Ahn. It was written by Mitch Iverson. The additional voices in this, of course, Blake Anderson plays Matt, and he does a terrific job.
Oh, yeah.
Lacey Chabert plays Tiash. John DiMaggio has been everywhere and done everything, okay? He is best known as Bender on Futurama,
Right.
and he was Jake the dog on Adventure Time. And of course, he's been in like a million DC movies and Lego types of things. He's been Killer Croc and a whole bunch of other different characters. He was the Joker in Batman Under the Red Hood.
Oh, cool.
I mean, there's just hundreds and hundreds of things that John DiMaggio has done. In fact, he was the executive producer and he was the guy behind I Know That Voice, the documentary about voice actors.
Oh, that's right. How cool.
Right. So I Know That Voice has been a terrific thing for voice actors. I love that documentary. We've been following it. We went to conventions. We talked about it a lot. We did interviews. And now they're even talking about doing I Know That Voice, the series.
Oh, wow.
So hopefully this is something that they can get together and get picked up, because what it would do is it would be giving us a regular behind the scenes look at what voice actors are doing.
That is so cool.
And, half the fun is seeing them behind the scenes. So that would be an awesome thing to see. And of course, a lot of the voice actors are behind it, and hopefully it can get picked up by some kind of distribution channel.
Awesome.
So we're looking forward to that for John. And of course, in this one, John is basically everyone else. Okay, so I think he plays Ozar. I think he plays the Boron dealer and the cloaked figure that they fight at the end.
Okay.
And
But
then
wait, there's more.
our final additional voice is Andrea Romano.
Yes.
I think she plays the teacher at the very beginning.
I think so too.
So that's my idea as to what Andrea Romano was in this one.
I really wish that the actors got, that there was a list of the characters that each of the actors played in each of these episodes, but that's left it for us to figure out, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's part of the fun, but
Yeah.
you're right. In this day and age, it should be easy to identify that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, and in Voltron the Third Dimension and Voltron Force, they did spell that stuff out. I'm just saying.
There's a kid in that scene in the beginning where the one word line is just nerd. And I think that might have been done by Blake Anderson. I really don't know. It could have been any of our cast. It could have been, any of the additional voices, but it sounded like a little bit like Blake Anderson.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It would be nice if they would identify every single voice, but I guess that would take away some of the fun.
I reckon. We've had 30 plus years to do that with Voltron Defender of the Universe, where they had what, six, seven, eight actors doing absolutely everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them were pretty easy to pick out, some not so much.
Right.
And now with a wider variety of cast, regular, and guest, it's a bit of a more challenging to figure that out.
Right.
Anyhow.
In this one, we're starting it with a flashback to when Pidge was known as Katie and she's in school. So she's just looking up in the sky and she's seeing, actually, it looks like a ship that had lifted off and launched it into the sky. And she's watching that from the window inside the classroom. And then she starts paying attention to the teacher. And the teacher says, "Photons from the visible spectrum are manipulated, creating a quantum storage network. It's the most advanced storage system available." And then Katie speaks up and she says, actually, the Galaxy Garrison is performing tests using DNA helixes as storage. That's the same way genetic information is stored in our bodies.
And just to jump in, this stuff has been discussed in the real world. So this is not all pulled out of a hat.
Yeah, I'm sure Mitch had to do a little bit of research for this, you know.
Yep. And I love that kind of stuff. That it really gives it an authentic feel.
Right. So at that point, another kid in the class goes, nerd.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mark.
Yeah. But then all the students start laughing, and then you just see tears start developing in Katie's eyes. So we're still in the flashback, and later that day, now we're in Katie's room at home. And then Katie grunts as she throws a book. And then Katie's brother, Matt, enters the room with a piece of cake on a plate in his hand. And he says, hey, Pidge? And Katie says, I hate it when you call me that. Matt says, sorry, Katie. Mom told me what happened today. I know what it's like to be the nerd. But you've got to keep studying hard. Katie says, what's the point? Matt says, well, it was my brain that got me into the Galaxy Garrison. And Katie gasps and she says, you got in? Yes! And she hugs him. Matt says, I guess it was my brains. Could have been my good looks or my big muscles. And Katie giggles and says, that's amazing. Oh, man, I'm so excited. And she looks for the book she threw earlier, and she grabs it and puts it back on the desk. And Matt says, what are you doing? Katie says, studying, so I can get into the Garrison with you and Dad.
I just love that relationship. That scene says so much about how they relate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So at that point, Matt gives sort of like a half smile. And I'm not sure if it's because he's proud of her for wanting to do what he's doing, or if he's worried for her. Hmm. What did you gather from that?
I kind of took it as just glad that she's doing what she's doing. I mean, I'm sure he's concerned about what might lie ahead for her in school. You know, if he's been the nerd, he knows what it's like to be treated as such. And mm-hmm. I'm sure he's got concern there, too. But in general, I'm sure that he's pretty sure that Katie will come out all right.
Right. So now we're back in the present time. Pidge is staring and remembering Matt, and she takes off her glasses, puts her helmet on, and we see that she's piloting Green Lion. Now, Shiro is on the screen, and Shiro says, Pidge, I don't like the idea of you going alone. You sure you don't need backup? Pidge says, I'm sure. The intel that shopkeeper gave me leads me to believe that they could pull out of their current location at any time. I need to act fast. This may be my only chance. So the view switches to the bridge of the castle ship where everyone sees Pidge on the screen. And then she says on the screen, plus you guys still have plenty to do on Alcarion. Shiro says, you're right. Good luck. Hunk says, hey, while you're out, will you look for some more Fluto beans? And then we see back to Pidge's perspective. She has sort of a sour look on her face. Lance says, no more beans for Hunk. And then Pidge groans. Ugh. Then she perks up fast with a smile. Gotta go.
Probably so she can get away from the beans.
Yeah. So as soon as the conversation went that way, she's, I gotta get out of here.
So is it just me, or has Pidge had the most solo missions of any of the Paladins so far? Whether by choice or by happenstance, I keep thinking of her stuck in the Trash Nebula by herself, as opposed to the other Paladins who were in pairs.
Well, at that same time, Keith was sort of on his own until he found Shiro.
Yeah.
Keith was sort of on his own when he was in the Blade of Marmora trials, but Shiro was still there.
Yeah, and he's with Kolovan as well. I mean, this is right. Pidge and her lion, and off they go.
Right. And she was also the one that saved them when Sendak took over the castle ship.
Yep.
Yeah. So, wow.
So, for the record, I love, love, love Pidge. She's so cool. And I love all of these flashback scenes. I would love to see some more of these from some of the other characters. But, you know, that could be overkill really quick, you know, because there's so much going on in the here and now. But these glimpses into Pidge's past are fascinating.
Right. Okay. Now we see Green Lion shooting through the galaxy on a distant planet in the industrial section of a city. Pidge, walking down an alleyway, dressed in what looks like a Jedi cloak, of all things.
You will take me to Jabba now. I mean, Matt.
And then there's like little floating droids that are passing by. She's on the roof of a building looking at her scanner and opens a metal door, walks down some rows where it seems like no one is there. You hear distant clanking. But then she sees a four-armed shirtless guy with a mohawk sitting on a chair with his feet up on a desk.
It looks like an Unalu.
It does a little bit. Anybody who's working on the black market, it seems, right?
Yeah, it is a shop. Black market, four arms. I'm thinking Unalu.
Right. So we're going to call him the shop caretaker?
Works for me.
Okay. So he says, shop's closed. Pidge says, I'm just looking for directions to a show. I heard it's explosive. The shop caretaker says, so you're the one looking for the nanothermite titanium boron. Very expensive. Difficult to procure, I assure you. Pidge says, keep it. Shop caretaker says, you're backing out of our agreement? Pidge says, altering it in your favor. I'll still give you the money, but in return, you tell me who is in this video and where to find them. She shows him the video footage of her brother from when he was being rescued.
Yes, with the pantaloons and all that stuff, yeah.
Right. So the shop caretaker says, why would I know those people? And Pidge says, because they used nanothermite titanium boron, and you're the only one in this section of the galaxy that seems to be selling it. Shop caretaker says, I've had some good luck selling things of value, and I think the Galra would pay a lot to know how you got your hands on that security footage. And then all of a sudden he pulls out a couple of swords. Pidge says, really? This is how we're going to do it? All I want is the information. So he jumps over the desk. She kicks low. He flips on his back. She sends out her Bayard on a string and grabs something with it. He gets up and goes towards her, and she pulls the Bayard back in, and a large brick hits him hard on the head, knocking him out. She goes, had to do it the hard way. So this is the same scene that they showed at New York Comic Con, and I loved it when they showed it.
Okay, that's cool.
And that was because I was sitting in front of Eugene Lee at the time.
Well, that would help.
It was just one of my favorite things because it shows just how far Pidge has come.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in all of her training and everything and all of her experience as a paladin. She goes in there looking like a Jedi and coming out looking like a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was sort of reminded of Allura when they were on that Galra base, you know, with her Bayard whip, just, you know, kicking butt and taking names. I mean, this is Pidge doing much the same thing, and it's so cool to see these characters in action.
Right. So now we see her. She's looking at her holographic screen and smiling, and she chuckles. Thanks for the intel. And then you see behind her, this guy's all tied up on the desk, and he growls. So she gets back in Green Lion, leaving that planet. She's looking at more of the video footage and who's in it. She focuses in on one of the people that helped Matt escape. And Pidge says, Tiash.
Now, this flat out, you know, this basically opens up that Pidge has been learning a lot more than she had learned when she was looking at this footage with Karan. Because we had never heard this name before. So clearly she's been doing some sleuthing.
Right. And she did get some information from this guy.
Oh, that's true. So maybe the name was there too. Okay, you're right. That must be where she got it from because she just said, in the next line,
looks like I've got a positive ID.
Aha, there we go. So I stand corrected. Fuzzy memory.
Last known whereabouts, Kreta's moon. She heads for that location with a determined look on her face. So back at the shop caretaker, who's untied now, a large cloaked figure is asking questions. The large cloaked figure says, where did he go? The shop caretaker says, I don't know. He's whimpering. He's looking for someone on Kreta's moon. But you don't want to mess with him. The weapon he was packing, I think he's a paladin of Voltron. And the cloaked figure chuckles. Even better. So I think, like I said before, both of these characters are played by John DiMaggio.
That's cool. Very cool. I love when you know that voice actors are essentially talking to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, which, again, happened all the time in Voltron Defender of the Universe for obvious reasons with the small cast. But I was thinking of an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation with Deanna Troi, Counselor Troi's mother, Loxana. There was a scene in one of the episodes where she's talking to the computer of the Enterprise. and they're sort of bickering a little bit. And they were both portrayed by the same actress, Gene Roddenberry's wife, Majel Barrett. And I just got such a kick out of that way back when, and it's fun to see that here again now.
Yeah, and it happened in the original Voltron series whenever Pidge was talking to Keith.
Yep.
They were both Neil Ross. And whenever Sven was talking to Lance, they were both Michael Bell.
Yep.
So that happened a lot.
It did.
So now Pidge is approaching that moon, and she looks at it closer and sees Galra fighters on it. She says, oh no, it's a Galra attack. Green Lion speeds down to stop the Galra fighter attack. Now a guy on the ground is firing a gun at the fighters. We hear the lion growling as it comes in, and Green Lion comes in, shoots down a couple of the Galra fighters. Through the smoke, in a really cool effect, by the way, Green Lion appears to the people on the ground.
Yep.
That was a cool effect. Just the smoke just came through the nose of Green Lion and just floated around it.
Yeah, I love when they do the fancy stuff with the smoke and atmospheric effects. Good stuff.
So the guy on the ground says, can it be the Green Lion? What an auspicious occasion. He starts running toward Green Lion. Pitch sees him on her screen. Pitch says, that must be one of the freedom fighters. She lands Green Lion and gets out to greet him. His name is Ozar. He says, greetings, I am Lieutenant Ozar. You must be one of the paladins. Pidge says, yes, I'm Pidge. What's going on? Ozar says, we defeated a wave of Galra forces. More are coming, so we're evacuating. So we see supplies are being moved to the ships. But now that you're here, we might stand a chance. Will the other lines be here soon? Pidge says, I'm sorry, Voltron isn't coming. It's just me. I'm looking for Tiash. Is she here? Ozar says, Tiash is inside the base, loading up the last of the medical supplies. We were just about to leave. Your timing is most fortunate.
I love this interaction here between Ozar and Pidge, because once again, it shows that there's this automatic trust between freedom fighters who had previously been working secretly, much like the Blade of Marmora, and the Paladins. It shows that the Paladins' reputation is really getting around and reaching places. And of course, there's this now, this implicit trust from Pidge to the freedom fighters. It just shows how the story is evolving.
Yeah, do you remember the one, was it the Ark of Tajir, when he said, I was under the understanding that there were five of you.
Yes.
Yeah, we seem to be a lion short right now.
Well, in this case, just four lions short.
Right. So Pitch says, thank you. I'll give you a hand loading up. I just need to speak with her first. Ozar says, thank you, Paladin Pidge. So Pidge is running toward the base, and all of a sudden, several laser blasts hit the base in front of her. She grunts and says, no! So Pidge is grunting to avoid the large rocks broken from the blasts. Several Galra fighters appear in the sky. Ozar says, they're back! The ship above the base takes off. Now Pidge, getting up and running back, says, Tiash, wait! So Pidge is now running in to get Green Lion, and she says to Ozar, get to cover! She uses her Bayard to pull herself into Green Lion's mouth just before it closes and gets hit by a Galra laser blast.
That is such a cool moment, by the way. I just love that whole thing.
That was good timing.
Mm-hmm. Your timing is most fortunate, Paladin Pidge.
Yes. Pidge is grunting as she gets knocked around a little bit inside the cockpit. She straps into her seat and says, you're really, really going to regret that. So one of the blasts hit the ship that was on the ground, and it looks badly damaged. And Pidge says, oh no. Green Lion grabs the Galra fighter in its teeth, throws it down in a huge explosion. Then Pidge says, is everyone okay? Ozar says, for now, thanks to you, but our ship is damaged. We are stranded and cannot help Tiash. Please, Paladin, you must help her. Pitch says, what about you? Ozar says, we know what it means to fight the Galra. The supplies on that ship are more important than our lives. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So like you said before, these guys have been, you know, fighting the Galra for a long time. They know what it's like to make this sacrifice.
Right. And again, it's hard to know what the Freedom Fighters have really been up to this point. They've been mentioned a lot, but not really seen. Certainly in the episode where Shiro is in recovery on the planet with the two Freedom Fighters there. I mean, they're working in secret, but this is one of the first times we see them openly fighting. And in this case, they're just defending themselves. But but to see them not only fighting, but knowing what they're doing, fighting, which would suggest they've been doing this, you know, indeed, actively fighting for quite a while.
And as far as we know, those two guys are still on that planet because Shiro took their last ship.
I know, come on.
Pitch says to everybody on the ground, "Everyone aboard, now." They go after Tiash's ship, which is being chased by two Galra fighters and taking on heavy damage. Green Lion fires on and destroys the first fighter. Then over the comm, Pidge says, "Tiash, I'm a paladin of Voltron. I'm here to help." Tiash says, "Please." And then she's groaning, "I've been hit." Pidge fires on the other fighter and misses three times, then grunts loud, and she uses the special power of Green Lion, fires into the fighter, and vines erupt from inside it, and it explodes.
Would you have ever thought, when Voltron Legendary Defender started, that one of the most powerful weapons of any of the Lions is a plant?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that.
It's amazing, and it looks so cool when it happens, but when you step back and think about it, that's really kind of weird, but it's so awesome in its weirdness.
Right, and Lions specifically are known for being meat eaters, aren't they?
Yes. Maybe that's why it's spitting out the plant.
Green Lion lands on top of the ship, and Pidge gets inside. Tiash is groaning in pain. Pidge says, "Oh no, are you okay?" And then there's groans. Pidge puts her on the floor. She coughs. And Tiash says, "The ship. Those supplies are needed immediately."
I have to wonder if this is Andrea Romano's performance.
No, I think this one's Lacey Chabert.
Hmm. We got to figure this out.
I think Tiash is Lacey Chabert. So just based on previous voices that she's done, it was a lighter voice.
Okay.
So Tiash says, "The ship, those supplies are needed immediately." And Pidge says, "Not without you." Pidge scans her and finds out she has several broken ribs. And then there's coughing. That's not good. Pidge says, "I'm going to get you some help." Tiash coughs and looks at Pidge a little cloudy and says, "Matt?" Pidge says, "He's my brother. I'm trying to find him." Tiash says, "You look so much like him. It's the eyes." More coughing. And then there's an electronic beep. Tiash hands Pidge an electronic card and says, "Here. Every rebel officer has one of these transponders. It's how we find each other in the field." More groans of pain. He may not have his anymore, but this is his code. And she coughs. "Now, please, please help get these supplies to my people." And then Tiash dies from her wounds.
This is one of the very first times that we see a character's face, hear a character speak, and then witness that character pass. You know, there have been many characters who have passed away who have been masked, for example. You know, and then Ulaz, of course, dies, but we don't see it actually happen. This is one of the very first times that we actually see someone pass away in this series.
Right. Another one was just with the mermaids. That one mermaid just walked right in to her death, and we didn't see her actually die.
Right. This is kind of a new thing for the show.
Right. Now we see Green Lion towing the ship in space toward a planet, and then Ozar over the comm says, "This should be far enough, Paladin Pidge. I've sent our coordinates to the rendezvous party, and they will be here shortly. Thank you for your help. These supplies will save countless lives in our fight against the Galra. I am sending you my transponder code. May the paladins of Voltron always be able to find me if necessary." Pidge says, "Thank you." Green Lion releases the tow cable. Pidge looks at the transponder, which has Ozar's code on it. She hits a button, and it switches to Matt's code. She starts heading in the direction of the arrow. So they hear the electronic beeping, more electronic beeping. The beeping continues, and then the beeping fades into another flashback.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going back in time again.
Yes, we are. Back in time. Anyway.
So Matt says, "I just got a message from Dad." They're both sitting on a rooftop with a laptop computer. Does this remind you of anything?
Maybe. Maybe the Rise of Voltron?
When they were all sitting on the roof and she's got a laptop?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So Katie says, "A message?" Matt says, well, actually, it's a quantum frequency. Katie says, but I thought we weren't supposed to talk to Dad. Matt says, it's a secret mission. What the garrison doesn't know won't hurt him. We're using a special two-step encryption. See? Dad and I both have this book, right? Katie says, totally. Matt says, well, that's the cipher. We need it to read the messages. So the quantum frequency tells us where in the book to look. Katie says, okay. Matt says, but that's not the best part. Dad and I know a second requirement, the real code. We both memorize additions and subtractions to numbers we send so that even if someone intercepts our messages and has the same book, they still don't know what we're saying. Katie says, seems a little low tech. Matt says, sure, but you can't rely too much on computers. The most powerful processor you have is right here. And he points to his brain. And it can never be hacked. Katie says, what, you think a brain can be hacked?
Well, I've always had that in the back of my mind, thinking about Shiro with that cybernetic arm of his. And clearly it's not his brain. But, you know, there's always been that sneaking doubt when they thought that maybe Zarkon was tracking his arm or him through his arm. Or maybe it was Allura. Maybe it was a Black Lion. I keep wondering. Is there anything more to that arm? And so when I first heard that line, I thought, I hope you're right, Matt, you know.
So you think a brain can really be hacked?
In the real world? Not today.
Oh, okay.
But maybe in the future.
Well, let's think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're predicting that there's going to be a time when machines are smarter than people.
Yes, and the nerdy scientist from The Simpsons used to say something about, you know, I for one welcome our robotic overlords, yes.
Well, at that time, do you think that machines will be able to hack our brains and find out what we're thinking?
Possibly. On the other hand, if machines ever surpass the human brain and complexity and reason and all that, would they bother? You know, I mean, maybe we wouldn't get much out of hacking the brain of an insect. Maybe an advanced AI wouldn't get much out of hacking us. Who knows?
Well, in this day and age where people can't even remember phone numbers, I don't think there's a chance of people memorizing that much to be able to, you know, have to worry about being hacked.
Isn't that the truth? So a little brief aside, but in my day job, I had organized a meeting and I wound up going into misremembering the conference room and several other things all in the same meeting. And so, yeah, I'm a bit scatterbrained sometimes. And I don't think there'd be much to find if someone were to hack mine, except a lot of useless trivia.
References to movies. Yeah, I get it.
Yes.
Yep. But all that stuff can probably get you a movie deal, you know?
Uh-huh.
There's a movie coming up called Ready Player One.
Uh-huh.
And I swear to God, that whole book was just everything that's in my brain.
That is funny.
Somehow put into a story.
That's funny. So I don't know if any of our listeners might remember the 1990s movie called Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Which was, like a Star Trek spoof.
Right.
Well, I was told by a close relative of the author of a famous Star Trek book that was published in the 1970s. She and I became friends in the 90s. And when she saw that movie, not long after we'd become friends, she said, you know that nerdy kid who figured out the map of the ship, the Protector, and helped Commander Taggart get to the room where they needed to get and all that? She said, that kid reminds me of you. So that apparently is me.
That's great.
There we go.
That's a compliment.
Oh, I took it as one.
Okay. All right. So after he says it can never be hacked, Katie says, well, what's it say? Matt says, it says bedtime is still 10, even if I'm in space. Katie says, 10? Matt says, just like the garrison, what Dad doesn't know won't hurt him. So we get back to the present time again. And we see the electronic beeping on the transponder, and Pidge says, Matt's signal is getting stronger. He must be around here somewhere. There! She points to the remains of a planet, which looks like the Galra had destroyed it. Pidge says, oh no, this can't be right. This place, it's completely destroyed. But it says he's here. So she lands and gets out of Green Lion. She's looking at a building that looks like a memorial. It has similar figures of those rebel forces and the freedom fighters.
Mm-hmm.
There's thunder rumbling all around. She sees an electronic monument, and there's beeping. An electronic voice says, "In honor of the 127,098 brave warriors that stood against tyranny, the quest for freedom is won through sacrifice."
Good gravy. Is this, I mean, we're about to walk through a very, very powerful scene, but even this very initial moment in the scene is, oh, it's gut-wrenching.
Yeah, well, at that very point, her eyes widen as she realizes what this place is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts running towards the back of the building. She says, "No, please, no." And there's more thunder rumbling. I think this thunder rumbling really is a good indication of the way things are going.
Oh, yeah. And I love that this is the power of film and animation to tell you things without having to literally have someone tell you things.
Right.
To use the power of sight and sound and image and composition and motion to explain what could otherwise only be told in dialogue. And I love that they're able to do that so effectively here.
Right. In these types of scenes and movies where there's only one character, like when Tom Hanks was in Castaway or something like that, you know?
Yep.
There's a lot that has to happen around them in order for the story to be continuing and moving on.
Mm-hmm.
So in this particular thing, she runs towards the back of the building. All this stuff is going on. There's thunder rumbling. She's breathing heavy. She runs into what looks like a graveyard full of electronic gravestone markers. And she says, "Oh, no." Now, she keeps running towards the signal destination. Another flashback occurs. This one, it's a mix of images with her family at the dinner table, her brother bringing her cake, both of them on the rooftop with the laptop, her hugging him, smiling at him, and then finally, as she reaches the signal home spot, a picture of him standing in his garrison uniform turning to face her.
That is such a... Ugh. I get shivers thinking about that last shot in the flashback. It is so, so moving.
Yeah. And she's standing in front of one of the markers, and she drops to her knees. So there's some electronic beeping, and then you hear an electronic voice say, "Matthew, halt." She starts crying.
We see a lot of what is being said by the electronic voice through the heads-up display in her helmet, which that first-person perspective really, really adds a lot to this as well.
Right. So the electronic voice continues, 001005. And then Pidge, with her head hung low, says, "I'm so sorry. I was too late." So she's sitting there. We see a little bit farther back of the view, and she's sitting there like in child's pose in yoga. Have you ever done yoga?
No. I have eaten yogurt, though.
All right. So she's sitting there in child's pose, like she's sitting on top of her legs with her hands down, like she's praying to somebody.
Right.
And it starts raining. And she's sobbing, "No, no, no." Now, to see the view from above, we're seeing all the individual droplets of water falling on the graveyard. That was a cool scene, too.
Yes.
That different view.
It's not just that it's a different view. It's a view from above. And depending on your spiritual leanings, this could be someone looking down on her, like her brother.
Right. And then we see a droplet fall onto the numbers on the marker. And Pidge notices it and says, "Wait, what? Matt's birthday is wrong."
Just to clarify, that water droplet is her tear.
Oh, okay.
She's looking at it through her helmet, the visor on her helmet, and it's a heads-up display. So her head is down and her tear, and this, again, augments the rain. I mean, it really adds to the feel here. It's dripping off of her eye and onto her visor, and that's what draws her focus to the birthday.
Gotcha. Okay, so she says, "Wait, what? Matt's birthday is wrong." And then she gasps, "A quantum frequency. It's a message. The code! But what's the second encryption item? I have the book! She pulls out an electronic pad. Now, factor in Dad and Matt's additions and subtractions. These are coordinates! He's alive! So, what you see next is you see her get into Green Lion and take off. But in the background there, there's a cloaked figure that was asking about her with the shop caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking on from a distance.
Yes. Kind of Boba Fett-like at this point. Just, following along, but keeping a respectful distance.
The Millennium Falcon?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then just getting to Bespin before they do.
Yes. And in a future podcast, the numbers that are displayed in the heads-up display here with Matt's date of birth and date of death, we're going to talk about those. I wrote an article on lionsandpilotsofbots.com about attempting to create a chronology, or at least start a chronology, for Voltron Legendary Defender, and these dates actually have some relevance. So we'll talk about those in a future podcast.
In the year 2385.
Something like that, yeah. All right, I keep thinking of in Transformers. It is the year 2005. You know, the movie from 1986? Anyway. A whole bunch of random fighting and 80s music is about to take place, and Orson Welles plays a planet.
That will plunge Buck Rogers 500 years into the future.
Ha ha, beady, 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 beady. Whatever you say, Mark.
Okay. Okay, now she's sitting in Green Lion's cockpit. She now has a really determined look on her face. So she sees some activity on her screen and she says, "This isn't good. Two Galwer cruisers and even more nearby." So she proceeds to cloak Green Lion so it's invisible. Pidge says, "I'm coming, Matt." She glides by all these Galwer ships undetected. She finds an asteroid with a deep chasm. She heads down it, and she says, "There doesn't seem to be anyone or anything here."
So how is she being tailed at this point? The cloaked guy, right? I mean, how does this cloaked person know to follow a cloaked Green Lion?
The cloak finds the cloak.
There you go. There you go.
Maybe he has some instrumentation that, as a bounty hunter, which I think we find out who he is later, but you were talking about Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
How did Boba Fett know that their destination was Bespin and that he should, do things ahead of time to guarantee that he gets what he wants out of it?
Yeah, fair question. Although the hyperdrive had been damaged and blah, 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 blah. Then again, how would he know that? Who knows?
Well, he might have already known that the Empire had people on Bespin.
Yeah, that's true.
He might have already known that and knew that they were heading for a trap.
The Lando system? Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, let's stop talking about that.
Yeah, okay. Back to Voltron, Legendary Defender. I love the Peter Cullen thing. Sorry, let's move on.
Right. Anyway, she's going down this deep chasm. She heads down it. There doesn't seem to be anyone or anything here. So she parks Green Lion at the bottom. She gets out and she uses her jetpack to move down into an opening. And at the bottom, she says, "It's a dead end." Then she notices that there's rocks on the ground. She picks one up and then drops it and it falls to the ground. And she says, "Gravity. Something must be generating gravity nearby."
Yeah, it's pulling pebbles to the ground, but not me. But it's still gravity.
So she scans the ground, and she finds a hidden doorway in the ground. So she uses the jetpack. She follows it down into a large open facility. And at the bottom, she sees some kind of monitoring station. She says, "This must be some kind of spy facility." So we see a figure come up behind her. She gasps as she sees it. It swings a staff at her. She dodges and runs. It chases her. She runs up a column, flips over behind the figure. She shoots her Bayard, and it wraps around the staff, but it pulls the string and Pidge down toward it. She dodges before the staff comes down on her. It pulls up for another strike, and Pidge says, "What have you done with my brother?" It stops. So she hits it in the face with her Bayard, and the mask flies off and hits the ground. It goes for the staff, and as Pidge comes in hard with the Bayard in front, he turns and Pidge sees it's Matt, and she barely stops right before hitting him in the face. That was a close one.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm glad that the mask came off so easily. That works really well. So, oh man, what a scene.
Yeah, that was a lot of action in a short period of time, by the way.
Yeah, no doubt. This is a really cool thing. It's very hard to explain this verbally, but Mark, you're doing a bang-up job.
Oh, well, thank you. So Matt says, Pidge? And then Pidge says, Matt? And then he stands up. She puts down the Bayard and it disappears. And then they hug each other. As they're hugging, Pidge says, oh my gosh, ever since the Kerberos mission, they said you were dead, but I knew in my heart that you weren't. And Matt says, I can't believe you found me. It doesn't seem possible. And then Pidge says, the thought of you and Dad kept me going, inspired me to do the impossible. So Matt looks at her and says, okay, but seriously, how did you get this far into space? Pidge says, it's a long story. Is there any chance you've heard of Voltron? Matt says, of course I've heard of Voltron.
I would imagine that many of our listeners have too.
Right. And Pidge says, well, I'm one of the paladins. Matt goes, no, seriously? You're a paladin of Voltron? He hugs her again and picks her up off the ground, twirling her around, and he says, that's so awesome. And then the cloaked figure comes in and says, what a touching reunion. The title of our episode.
Oh, yeah. How could we forget?
So Matt puts Pidge down. Pidge says, who are you? And she gets out her Bayard. The cloaked figure says, who I am is not important. I am here to collect a bounty on your brother Matt. But a paladin of Voltron and the Green Lion? What a day. Now, you said where he says, what a day?
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of the commercial where there's a sort of a dichotomy where the teenage girl's getting her first car from her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, there's this guy who had his car like sort of hijacked and had all of his like wheels taken off and everything. And it's on cinder blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's going into the insurance office to report the claim, he's going, what a day. And then, of course, she's happy and saying, what a day.
Yeah, love that stuff. Good stuff.
So Pidge says, stand back, Matt. And at the same time, Matt says, stand back, Pidge.
That is so fun. I just love that. They're both butt-kicking fighters. And they both, when they last saw one another, neither of them could probably fight their way out of a schoolyard fight. You know what I mean? It's just neat that they've both grown similarly, although through very different means.
Right. And they're both ready to protect each other just that quickly, but then they realize that they're both the same.
Yep.
Then Pidge says, let's show this guy what the Holts are made of. Yes. So the cloaked figure says, looks to me like you're made of meat, just like everyone else. And he pulls out two big electric whips, one in each hand. And then he runs toward them. He swings them at both of them and they dodge it. But then Pidge gets hit with an end of it and screams in pain as the electricity zaps her. Matt comes at him with his staff and says, stay away from my sister. And then the cloaked figure moves back but blocks the twirling staff. Then the cloaked figure says, you're both worth more to me alive, but I'll take something over nothing. And he swings both whips around and they wrap around Matt and shock him hard. And Matt screams loud. Pidge shoots her Bayard past his face, past the cloaked figure's face, and it lodges in a column above them. The cloaked figure figures that she'd missed, but she swings in and kicks him in the face, landing on a ledge higher up. The cloaked figure says, you'll have to do better than that. And he grunts and he swings up and chases her from ledge to ledge, higher and higher. Pidge comes back down using the jetpack to fly out, and the cloaked figure comes down. Matt yells out, Pidge, the panel! So Pidge removes a panel from the wall, exposing some wires. The cloaked figure shoots his whip at it, and the whip wraps around the wires. The cloaked figure says, what? And then Pidge says, Matt, now! Matt comes on the other side of the cloaked figure. The guy shoots out his other whip, and Matt ducks, and it wraps around a metal pole. Matt sticks his staff on the ground and it flips up to hit the electric whip, and the cloaked figure gets the shock of his life.
This whole scene is just amazing. I mean, it's not just that they're good fighters, they're good nerd fighters. And they use that knowledge along with their fighting abilities to kick some serious keister. It's awesome.
Yeah, did you see The Sorcerer's Apprentice, the live-action one?
I don't believe I have, no.
There was a similar thing in that where they were using a lot of Tesla-type things.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out.
That's how he defeated the Morgana at the end.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
So you'd like that one.
I will have to see that at some point.
All right, so Matt and Pidge both hit him at the same time, knocking him into a wall. He's done for. Now, Pidge says, good thinking, exposing that electric whip to the asteroid's magnetic field. Matt says, you're the one who recognized he was clearly using direct current and thought about completing the circuit. And then they high-five and Pidge goes, Tesla! And they both laugh. Matt says, I have the coolest little sister in the whole galaxy. Now all we have to do is find Dad. Pidge takes off her helmet. Matt says, you kept the glasses? Pidge says, of course I did. So now we flash back to pictures in front of the shuttle that Matt was using for the Kerberos mission.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt says, all right, Katie. Pidge says, no, call me Pidge. I'm going to miss that. And you. Matt says, I'm going to miss you too. But you know, space, I'm so excited. Pidge says, I know. But I can't believe I have to go through middle school without you.
Is it just me, or did you find middle school to be the toughest of the various, you know, elementary, middle, and high school to get through?
Well, for me, it was only 2 years, but yeah, there was a lot of changes going on with people and stuff like that. I mean, you're going from elementary school where you were really well protected to high school where you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And in middle school, it was sort of that middle ground. It's like some people were already on their own. Some people were still being protected, you know, so there was a big variance in things. People were developing before other people. People hit puberty before other people. It's a big change in your life at that point.
It really is. And I'm one of those 2 years in middle school people. Back in that day, we called it junior high.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easily the toughest years of my school experience. So I totally get where Pidge is coming from here.
Yeah. Well, for me, there were some things that were the same all the way through. I mean, my principal followed me all the way through elementary school to middle school to high school.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Wow.
When I was in elementary school, Frederick Schwank was my principal. When I went to South Junior High, he was my principal.
Hmm.
When I went to high school at Penridge High School, he was my principal. And the funny thing is his wife was a nurse, a school nurse. So I not only had the same principal throughout all of my life, I had the same nurse.
That is amazing.
So that was pretty cool. There's a lot of kids that have a lot of changes going on when they go from school to school and stuff like that. I had a lot more, you know, of the same thing going on. So I don't know. Maybe it helped with my development. I don't know.
Yeah, I can say that I was bullied a lot in school, and the junior high years were particularly bad for that. So I've occasionally spoken out on social media about anti-bully kind of things, and it's an issue that I feel very strongly about. And middle school or junior high, back in our day, was where it was particularly bad for me. So to those of you out there who have experienced this and still do, we do feel for you. Please don't hesitate to reach out to your friends and loved ones, because you are not alone.
Well, it's like that kid to Katie saying nerd and mm-hmm. all the kids laughing.
Yep.
You know, these days, people are proud to be nerds. You know, the geeks rule.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot more community with online social media and all that. Of course, bullying is so much worse now than I assume that when bullying exists, it's much worse than before as well, because with social media, you know, in the old days before all that, you know, you got bullied just at school. But once you got home, you were home. But if you've got a smartphone, a tablet, whatever, if those folks are, if they're so inclined, they can harass you 24/7. And I can only imagine how hard that must be for some people.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
yeah.
So getting back to the story,
Yes, we now return.
Matt says, "You can talk to me anytime." Pidge says, "I thought I wasn't allowed to bother you guys on your mission." Matt says, "Of course you're not, but you know the code." And he winks at her. "What the garrison doesn't know." And he chuckles. "Hey, check this out." And he takes off his glasses and he gives them to her. And Pidge says, "Don't you need these?" Matt says, "Not anymore. The garrison fixed my eyes. I look way cooler now, yeah?" Pidge says, "No." And they laugh. Matt says, "I'll be back soon." Pidge says, "You better, or I'm coming up to space and getting you." And then she pushes him to the ground and puts on the glasses and looks up at the sky.
So cool.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
And she did go up into space and get
Oh yeah, she
him.
did.
True to her word.
And neither of them are back yet. Will they return to Earth in a future season? What will they find there? Will they find their father? What is their mother up to? What is the dog up to? There's so much to learn in future episodes and future seasons of this show. And what an amazing episode this was.
Her mom's in Arkham Asylum and she's turned into the Joker. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Robeast Colleen. No.
But you gotta imagine it's been pretty hard on mom losing her husband, her son, and then her daughter.
Yeah, goodness. And in all cases, not having a real clue about what happened. I mean, obviously her husband and her son went up on the Kerberos mission, but as far as she knows, they're dead and it was a pilot error. Now Pidge has disappeared. Who knows what the garrison is saying about that? Yeah, so we feel for you, Colleen, out there. Hang in there, hang tough. They'll be back someday.
Yeah, so we've now seen a reunion episode where Matt is officially back.
Yeah, and did you expect Matt to come back so soon? What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. When we were at New York Comic Con, I was talking on stage with Mark Daniel, remember? And I said, I'm hoping that, there's a certain brother of Pidge that appears in this season. And it happened. And I'm glad it did. The fact that she had been looking for them since the beginning, that was her driving force before she found out about Voltron and all this other stuff. That kind of stuff, she almost left the Voltron team because of it. But she got to a greater acceptance of the bigger picture. But that didn't mean that wasn't still in her mind and that she still wanted to do that. And she had a team that was willing to support her on that. So when, at the beginning of this episode, when she's leaving for the mission, they're willing to help her, but she wanted to do this on her own. And they were okay with that. So you realize that the Green Line being out there all by itself is a risk, and that leaving the rest of them exposed like that was a risk. But this was a risk all of them were willing to take so that Pidge could get more information or even find her brother, which is the ultimate.
And so I do wonder what would have happened had she found Matt and he said, "Oh, wow, I'm so glad you found me. Now please take me home. I'm late for the chess club." Or, "I really hate being in space. This experience has soured me to the whole thing. Let's go back home." I wonder what Pitch would have done.
Well, boy, I'm kind of a big deal if you didn't know, Matt. One of these paladins of Voltron.
And there's that little thing, Dad. So this makes you wonder, though.
It's kind of good that they're both on the same team. You know what I
Absolutely.
mean?
Oh yeah. And frankly, they're so similar, not just in the eyes, but in their temperament, their intellect. They're almost like twins. Twins. They're not.
Like pigeon chip.
Exactly. Defender of the Universe reference. The fact that they are so similar almost guarantees that the situation I sort of mused about would never happen, where, Matt would say, I'm really fed up with this whole space thing. I got captured by aliens. I've been fighting all this time. Let's just go home and, watch The Price is Right and eat some Cheerios. What do you say? Fortunately, that didn't happen. Although, if it ever did, I imagine that somehow Bob Barker would still be around and he would come back and kick Drew Carey aside and still be hosting the show.
After he kicks Adam Sandler's butt on the golf course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this was an awesome episode. And like you had said before, that whole thing about, when you're talking about a single character who doesn't have much dialogue, they're either talking to themselves, or they have to rely on all those other things that the animators can do with, setting up the scene, the environment, and then like you said, the sounds and the environment coming together as well. So there was thunder, there was raining, all these contributed to that thing at the graveyard.
Yeah, and that's all part of the language of cinema, the language of animation that has evolved since the art form first came about. And it's such a powerful thing when it's done well, as it is here. I'm sure you've seen Up, the Pixar film.
Yes.
The flashback that explained where the old guy, how he had met his wife, how they got married and their lives together. Not a single line of dialogue in the whole thing, but it's so telling. You get it all, and it's all through visuals and music and sound effects. No dialogue. It's amazing.
And not a dry eye in the house.
Oh, yes. Yes. And so this is not Up, of course, but it does get into the visual language much more than the spoken word. And when done well, as it's done here, it is just a truly amazing thing.
Well, it has to do with the tone of things as the episode is going along. So you have the tone at the beginning where she's very determined and she knows what she has to do. And then she gets the information and it leads her to Tiash. And when she gets to Tiash, of course, what happens? But disaster. The one person that she's trying to get help from is now dead. Okay, but luckily, this person gave her something before she died. There was a moment there when Tiash died that just Pidge thought, "Oh man, you got to be kidding me! I went all this way, I came all this way, and now the one person that can help me is gone." But luckily, like I said, she had something that could lead her in the right direction. And then when she gets to that direction, then she sees the graveyard, and just man, the absolute worst possible scenario.
Yeah, it's such a roller coaster, and it's authentic. It's doesn't feel contrived. I mean, obviously, you're as you write the story, you got point A, point B, point C. So yes, it's all engineered, but it doesn't feel that way. It feels very natural because Pidge is experiencing it, and we are experiencing it with her. It works.
Right. So Pidge went through a lot, and as a result, Bex Taylor Klaus went through a lot. And what a performance by Bex Taylor Klaus in this one.
Yep, hats off to her.
Yes, just an amazing performance. We really appreciate the work that Bex does with Pidge.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this was just a truly incredible episode. It's one of my favorite from season four. And it's turned into one of my favorite in the whole series.
Easily, totally agree.
So I'm looking forward to, more interactions with Matt now that, we're going to get to see him, come back with the team.
Yes, and of course, Matt Holt had a cameo in our holiday carol that we made back in December. Of course, voiced by fans, fellow fans, rather than by the actual voice actors, and voiced by you, actually. And golly, that was fun. So we should probably maybe talk about how that all came about, I guess. But we did a little bit in a prior podcast. But the
Right.
bottom line is, I got voice submissions from everybody individually, and then I had to edit the whole thing together and then put the photo clips around that. And when I listened to each person's individual stuff, I mean, there was a little bit of, okay, this is the line where this character does this. Here's take one. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and singing, and then here's take two. Okay, here's the next part. But when I heard you doing the Matt Holt voice, I just loved it. It was just hilarious. I was laughing my head off. And great stuff, man.
Well, you had asked us to submit those and any other voices that we wanted to try. So I put together a little, MP3 file for you, and I happened to have an idea how they did things in the recording booth because we got to see it with Andrea Romano. So I put together one where I had three different takes on it, and then one there where I just went completely crazy. So every one of them had four takes on it.
Yes. And I seem to remember thinking that one take was consistently the best, one of the numbers, not all the time, but for whatever reason, as I scrubbed through the MP3 file, there was one take. It was take X, whatever it was, but in most of the lines, that particular take sounded the best to me. But all of them were just so much fun to listen to. And of course, we had Mel Mako and Zilla and Seamus Kelly and yourself and myself. And wow, that was a lot of fun to do. So as we allude to the next episode that we're going to review, the Black Sight, one of the bits from that episode play sort of is a direct feed into what's in that Holiday Carol video. So the holidays are past us, but the video is still out there. Check it out on our YouTube channel.
We're looking forward to a lot of things here. Of course, you had done that video review of the classic 84 Legendary Lions set.
Yes, and Retro Blasting and many other YouTube channels, but Retro Blasting, the folks there, Michael French and Melinda Mock, are dear friends of ours, and they've contributed a review video on their channel, and it's an amazingly well done piece. And the toy itself is really great, so if you see it out there, pick it up.
The good news is we're getting to see more and more people submitting that they're seeing them in Target or in Toys R Us or in Walmart, out there in the wild. So I think the last one we saw was a Target in San Diego that had a couple of the Black Lions. You got to keep hunting for it.
And what's interesting is that because this is new product, it seems funny to me that new product is all around the older Lions, but they're starting to crowd out the Legendary Defender, Legendary Lions, which is only natural because those have been around for about a year. So it's very interesting to see new toys being the old Lions, but it's just so much fun to see them back again in stores at mass retail. We've talked about this numerous times over this podcast, but it is just amazing to see Voltron have a lasting presence at a Walmart, at a Toys R Us, at a Target for the first time in so many years. It's just great.
And sure, we'd love them to take up more shelf space on the shelves at the toy stores. But you have seen the progression of Playmates toys with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles too, right? So you've seen, how many different versions of Ninja Turtles items that they came out with over the years. Just how many different, SKUs did they have?
Oh gosh. And I wonder if anyone out there really knows how many distinct figures they've made over the last, what, 30 years? I mean, it hasn't been in continuous production for that time, the toy line, but in almost continuous production. I mean, just pick any character at random, Leonardo, or any of those characters. How many figures of them have been made, not counting re-releases? I'm sure it would boggle the mind.
And there's a lot of people out there who are making their own stuff out there and maybe even selling that. But you have to realize when you mass produce something for as many stores and as many outlets as you're talking about around the world here, in order to get those into people's hands, you have to come up with a manufacturing process and everything. And then you have to change that manufacturing process to match a new design. So it's quite incredible the manufacturing and everything that goes into the making of toys and other types of merchandise to be able to mass produce them so that you can distribute to so many different places.
Toy making is actually this is quite a tangent we're taking from Reunion,
That's okay.
but toy making to me is so fascinating. It's art, It's science, it's economics, it's everything. And one of the things that I didn't fully appreciate as a kid, certainly, is how important shelf space and package size are in toy design. You know, you think, ugh, I want to make this vehicle that shoots little missiles or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the cost of manufacture, the tooling costs and the target, the retail price and all that other stuff. But how much shelf space are you likely to get at a mass retailer like a Walmart? Because shelf space is at a premium at those places. And what kind of package sizes, the shipping boxes, you know, these action figures come from the toy makers in boxes of a particular size.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have inside knowledge into how the Voltron toys have been made by Playmates Toys, but it's probably no coincidence that the basic action figures are of the same basic size as the Ninja Turtles figures and are on blister cards that are the same size in shipping boxes that are likely of the same size, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the logistics in place for toys of particular sizes and whatnot. And I just find all of that so fascinating. And I know I'm a total dork, but,
mm-hmm.
thanks for saying that. That's good. I agree with you and me, but it just amazing stuff. So bottom line, let's jump out of that stuff. The Playmates toys have been a lot of fun. I recently picked up the Defender Voltron. I can't remember if I mentioned that in the last podcast. That's the 12-inch non-transforming, non-electronic, a simple action figure with a missile firing shoulder cannon and a forearm held shield. But it's just a fun toy. The sculpt is great. And
can you pose it?
Yeah, it's posable. I mean, it's not as articulated as the Ultimate Voltron or the Legendary Defender combined Voltron or the Metal Defender one.
Or the Blazing Sword Voltron.
That's, well, if Matty Collector, yeah, that thing's got so much articulation, it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm talking about 30 points of articulation on a figure that was only like 8 inches tall, right?
Yeah. For the newer, the listeners who are fans of Legendary Defender only, right around 2011, 2012, Mattel, through their Matty Collector imprint, I guess you could say, or brand, had sold some Voltron toys, and one of them was a non-transforming version of Voltron from the Defender of the Universe show, and it had all that articulation you mentioned, roughly 30 points for a figure that was 8 inches tall, and it looks more like the cartoon version of Voltron than any other Voltron that has ever been made to date, including Legendary Defender. Well, I don't know about that. I think the new Defender Voltron and Ultimate Voltron could give it a run for its money in terms of authenticity. But yeah, so much articulation packed into that little thing.
Right. But at the time, it was the only $20 Voltron you could get.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, everything else was way more than that. It was like at least 200 for any collectible Voltron out there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a playable, you know, toy. You know, you could really play with it.
Yep. At the time, I remember that everybody was all about the Lions that were sold at the same time through the, I think it was called Club Lion or something like that. That was the subscription.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, and right. Everybody was all about those and really didn't give the Blazing Sword Voltron its due. But after the fact, as the value started to rise on the collector's market, people began to realize, oh, yeah, that thing was pretty cool. And it truly is a fun thing. And I think Defender Voltron is much the same way. I think it and Ultimate Voltron are too easy to overlook when you have the Legendary Lions from Legendary Defender and the Metal Defender Lions, and now the Classic Lions. When you have a set of the transforming combining Lions, it's all too easy to overlook the ones that don't transform, but those are often gems in and of themselves because they look so true to the show. They don't have to transform, and they look really nice in their own way. And I really like the Defender Voltron far more than I thought I would. So if you see it out there, it's about $20 at the Target where I saw it. It is worth picking up. And I've got a couple of them, one at work on my desk, one here. And okay, I've got three of them, one of them boxed. They are cool.
Okay.
So there you go. Major tangent from Reunion.
That's okay. So you had mentioned the fact that our next podcast, we're going to be talking about Black Sight.
Yep.
So that is the third episode of season 4 for Voltron Legendary Defender. We're looking forward to talking about that.
We got some fun episodes to talk about ahead. Fun news as things unfold. We're all waiting for season 5. We got some good stuff coming up. But I think for this week, we are good to go.
Right. We're going to continue doing these episode reviews. And at the same time, we are gearing up for some Voltron fan artist spotlights and Voltron cosplay artist spotlights.
That will be fun.
So those will be coming up soon too, and then we're going to be getting into convention season and all kinds of things happening. And who knows, if season 5 comes in, then that of course will be something we want to focus on as well.
Absolutely. And once again, we want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. This podcast would not be what it is without each and every one of you taking part and sharing in the Voltron experience. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And you can also, follow us on YouTube. Greg's video for those legendary lines set is out there on our YouTube channel. That's, YouTube, and look for Let's Voltron. And then also our Twitter account at Let's Voltron, our Facebook account, Let's Voltron, and we're also on Pinterest and Instagram.
Yeah.
And then of course we have our T Public store, the Let's Voltron store on T Public, which you can get to by going to T Public and just search for Voltron, and you'll be able to find our stuff. Or you can search for Let's Voltron, but the easiest way is to go to letsvoltron.com, where all of our podcasts are, and icons at the top for all of our different sites that you can go to, but the one on the far right is our T Public store. So just click on that icon and then you can get right to our store.
Yep.
So we're looking forward to next week with Black Sight, our review of episode 3 from season 4, and we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron.